Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to another great episode of Israel Unplugged. This is where you get the unadulterated facts of where we're holding in the redemptive process, focusing primarily on the ingathering of the exiles. This is Josh Wander from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, and I'm here with my co-host, Rabbi Moshe Lichtman from Beit Shemesh.
Hello, hello. Thank you for joining us again, and we hope you will have a meaningful hour together with us.
We have a very exciting and a very serious hour scheduled ahead of us, because not only are we giving our normal talk about the importance of living in Eretz Yisrael today, and especially today, and Dvar Torah, maybe on this week's Parsha, but also we're going to be talking about the rise of anti-Semitism in the world today, outside of Eretz Yisrael, of course, in the United Kingdom, in the United States. I just read an article, I think today, that said that almost half of British Jewry are afraid to wear anything on their bodies indicating that they're Jewish, meaning wearing a yarmulke or a Star of David or anything that would indicate they were Jewish, because they're afraid of the backlash. They're afraid to walk in the streets and show that they're Jewish. This is a very serious concern, especially because of what is happening on the extreme right, the extreme left. It doesn't matter what extreme it is. It's coming from all different directions, and we feel that it's very, very important. As Rev. Nachman Kahana, we mentioned last week, has indicated, if you can't make it to Israel, it's imperative right now to prepare yourself for a possible backlash, an anti-Semitic backlash, and that has clearly been happening in the recent years. And it's continuing to happen now, and we're going to speak about how you can prepare yourself for that, why you should prepare yourself, if you should prepare yourself for that. This is a live show. We want you to call in. So if you're in the United States, please make sure to call in 301-768-4841 with your comments and questions. If you're in Israel, then it's 02-650-0151. And then you can call in, and you can discuss it with us, and you can ask your questions. Please stay with us, and we'll be right back.
How did a nice Jewish girl from Delaware end up living in Israel? Shalom, I'm Natalie Zipinski. Join me on my show, Returning Home. Meet different people who have moved to Israel. Hear their personal stories, their highs, their lows, and everything in between. Each week, we talk to experts on immigration and the process of moving to Israel. Listen to Returning Home every Thursday, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Israel Unplugged. We're here with the one and the only Avi Abelo. Avi, thank you so much for joining our show. Like I was saying off air, I appreciate you. I have you on I've had you on my podcast, my recorded podcast, but this is the first time that you are on the live show. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate being on the show with you, Josh, and with Rav Lichtman. Mamash, thank you.
So the topic of discussion, I think, is very apropos, because everybody is feeling the tension happening in the United States. We're feeling it here, so for sure the people that are in the United States are feeling it, and around the world. There's no question that the United States is a superpower, and what happens there affects the entire world. The transition, peaceful or not, between governments is always I should say the opposite. It's not usually something that is eventful. This time it's very eventful, and everybody is feeling the pressure. The Washington, D.C. has become basically a military base with 30,000 soldiers guarding it right now from attack. And that brings along with it a lot of extremists, this feeling. And that extremists can come from the right. It can come from the left. This is not a political show. But this is to say that they're in history, it's always happens over and over again that when there is some sort of tension, they always find the Jew to be the scapegoat. And there's a feeling that at least I have and many others, perhaps you share that feeling, that the Jews in America are possibly in for a backlash. And it's something that Rabbi Nachman Kahn, I do a weekly podcast with, mentioned that if the Jews that can't make it to Israel, of course, every Jew should make it to Israel. That's the whole purpose of this show, is to encourage people to come back to Israel. If you can't make it immediately back to Israel, prepare to defend yourselves, because we know how history works. What do you think, Avi?
Yeah, I wish I didn't agree, but I unfortunately agree. I mean, I've been talking about the growth of anti-Semitism in America back during the years of the Obama presidency, during the 8 years of the Obama presidency, when American Jewry was in euphoria, having the most Jewish president ever, unfortunately, as many of our American Jewish brethren liked to have believed. But they were ignoring the growth of anti-Semitism by the bear hug that the Islamists in America, that the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement, that the anti-Israel, anti-Semitic movements on college campuses were growing with the support of the Obama administration. And American Jewry was silent about that. And then we come to today. And believe it or not, before the elections, I mean, I was calling out to my, again, family and friends in America, and I was saying, listen, folks, doesn't make a difference who's going to be elected, whether it's Trump or Biden. The day after the elections, it's going to be a different America, because how half of America, however you define that half, 40%, 45%, 49%, whatever, half of America is going to be totally upset that the winner is going to be destroying the America they want. Whether Trump is reelected and he's the Hitler reincarnated, according to the left, even according to too many of our own Jewish brothers and sisters there, one of the biggest lies in the world. So obviously that's something you have to fight against if he wins. And obviously if Biden becomes president, then he's bringing in the far left agenda that is also about destroying America as we know it, with anti-Semites in actual power and empowering them in the halls of Congress, whether as heads of committees or as heads of in different foreign policy roles that have to do with Israel. So I was saying before the election, it's very sad, but regardless of who wins, anti-Semitism is going to grow. And like you said as well, I'm an equal opportunity employer. Like, yes, I'm very vocal about the anti-Semitism on the left, because unfortunately most of the Jewish world and Jewish media and rabbis and politicians and journalists don't talk about the anti-Semitism on the left. It's so much easier to point to far-right people. Oh, they're neo-Nazis, right? Because in the Jewish mind, the collective, that's the modern anti-Semitism. So no one hardly in the Jewish world talks about the anti-Semitism on the left. But at the same time, yes, there is a growing anti-Semitism on the right, as there is all this anger about a potential stolen election and the growing delegitimization campaign against anyone who is a conservative or a Trump supporter. The anger on the right is growing. And like we all know, the first ones targeted by anyone when things are going bad are the Jews. And yes, when they say the globalists, they mean the Jews. When they say the Rothschilds, they mean the Jews. And listen, I'm out there. I see what people are saying, and I'm seeing more and more people, yes, who are on the right and Trump supporters. Not all of them, but you only need is a few. But there are voices of targeting the Jew, of connecting the Jew with the leftist agenda to destroy America. Yes, it's growing on the right as well. And so now we have not just in America, but also in Europe, and you specifically mentioned it, and Britain, the UK, where we have this combination of growing anti-Semitism from the Islamic world, together with that growing anti-Semitism in the leftist ideological world, and also with it growing on the right. So it's a very, very scary reality we are living in that unfortunately will just get worse as things goes on, regardless of who's president. And like you, Josh, my message to everyone, to every Jew, and like Rav Lichtman, my message to every Jew is come home for one reason, because it's home. That's the reason we want each and every Jew to wake up and say, yeah, I want to come home to Israel because it's home. We don't want them running away. But for those people that have still not woken up to that feeling, that connection, and wanting to come home because it's home, well, wake up to reality. We are living the change of the Golden Medina that I'm glad my grandmother is not alive to see, because she and her family escaped Europe and came to America, so got to enjoy the Golden Medina and what it did to help save the Jewish people, finally to have freedom, to live as Jews freely. It's not the same America, and that's sad, but anyone who understands Jewish history knows this is Jewish history. Spain was the best country for America, and then the Spanish Inquisition. Germany was a great country for the Jews, and then there was the Nazis came to power and the Holocaust. It's just our history, and we have to be able to look back in history and not think that it doesn't repeat. It does repeat itself, and we have to wake up and learn the lesson and see reality for what it is today. But don't be depressed about it, because then you're just wasting your time. Realize, all right, this is the way things are going. Somehow this is part of God's plan. I got to go home and wake up and make this difference by coming home to Israel. So that's the message I try to get across.
And it's not a secret that Jews are very successful and they're very influential. And I mean that on both sides. When you have the vast majority of Jews who are on the left, who are members of the Democratic Party, or big supporters of Biden and Harris, you have the Schumers and the Feinsteins. You have the money of Soros. I mean, on one side. On the other hand, you have on the other side the Trump administration, who has a Secretary of Treasury that's Jewish, an Undersecretary who is a Chabad Chassid for the first time. You have the Jareds in the White House and the Ivankas and you don't have to go very far to see how integrated the Jews are in the American society, and that will be their downfall. I remember there's a famous Torah that is said over by Rabbi Meir Kahana, Hashem Yikom Damo, that he says that in the I think I might have said it before on the show, that in the Megillas Esther, we have the whole lead up to the story of Megillas Esther, where the Jews are on top of the world. They are being invited to the king's party. They're there in the White House, in the king's palace. They're there, you know, partying with the vessels of the temple, and they think that they got it made because they are totally integrated within the Persian society. And then all of a sudden, overnight, everything changes, and they're about to be annihilated. Now, between these two events, The Megillah, if anybody who listens to the Megillah on Purim, which is coming up next month, knows that it's we say, it says that the city of Shushan, the capital city of Shushan, was Nivocha. There's a Hebrew word which means confused. And Rabbi Kahana says, what kind of adjective is that? You're about to be destroyed. You're about to be annihilated. We can understand using adjectives like we were scared, we were fearful, we were upset, we were all different things. But why would you use the word confused? Because, and he says, that is exactly the adjective that was chosen, because these are people that just felt that they were so much a part of the society, and then in one second things turned on them, and they were just in complete shock, in complete confusion, and that's why it uses the word nivocha.
Yeah, that's a beautiful and very powerful interpretation of the story. And you know, I like to also look upon to just give another name.
One second. Can you hold on? Avi, hold on. We just have to have a break. And right after the break, we want to hear your story. If you could just hold on with us. Is that all right?
Sure.
Okay, great. So I want everybody to stay with us. And again, we are a live show, so make sure to call in with your questions and comments from America, from here. And we look forward to hearing from you and speaking to you soon.
Shalom, everybody. Making a difference often takes just one moment and one person at a time. I am Orly Benny Davis, your show host on Israel News Talk Radios from Jerusalem with love. You'll be hearing people talking about politics, religion, social issues, and making a better tomorrow. Join me, Orly Benny Davis, for God and Country from Jerusalem with love.
Wednesdays on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Israel Unplugged. This is Josh Wander, and I'm here with my guest, Avi Avilo. We're discussing anti-Semitism in the world in a post-Trump era. This is a live show. You can call in with your comments, questions. If you're in North America, if you're Jewish and you're unfortunate enough to be stuck in exile still, then your number is 301-768-4841. If you're fortunate enough to be in the land of Israel, the number is 02-650-0151. Off air, we were talking about a show that Avi does with Carolyn Glick. Avi, can you tell us a little bit what she was thinking? Because she's an amazing voice.
Yeah, so right before the Carolyn Glick information regarding anti-Semitism, I just wanted to throw in a historic anecdote. The Abarbanel, if I'm not mistaken. I mentioned earlier that Jewry flourished in Spain under the Spanish kingdom, and Abarbanel was like one of the highest roles to the king and queen, one of their highest advisors in the court. And when the Inquisition came about, they basically told him, "Oh, not you! You stay with us!" Right? We're forcing everyone else to leave, or we're killing anyone else who converted and they're pretending. But you, Abarbanel, you're our good Jew. So you just convert and you could say everything's gonna be fine. You stay with us, and it even affected the top advisor. And basically, he said, "No, thank you. I want to remain a Jew," and he left. But to anyone today who thinks, "Oh no, I'm connected with the right party," well, it doesn't make a difference which side. But let's say now it's going to the Democrats. To all those Jews who believe America is their home and they're safe because the Democrat Party is going to look out for them and they have the shifts and the Feinsteins, whatever, in politics, but they're going to be okay. No, not at all. Just look at Jewish history. Even the Jews who were in power and end up getting hit by the anti-Semitic powers that grow.
Not only the Abarbanel. I think the Abarbanel didn't make it to Israel, but the Ramban indeed did, as a result of his famous dispute and him leaving Spain and came to Israel and rebuilt a whole community here in Israel, which to this day, if you go to the Old City, his synagogue is still standing in the Old City of Jerusalem.
Right. So connecting that to current days, so I'll go to your question. So yeah, I run a program called The Pulse of Israel, and anyone can go visit the pulseofisrael.com website to see the interviews and the videos that I do. And every once in a while, I interview Carolyn Glick for her insight into current events. And this week, besides talking about Sheldon Adelson, which is a positive story to talk about, and a person that she goes, he is our modern Moses Montefiore, in a sense, or a Baron Rothschild for the Jewish people that unfortunately is not getting the respect and kavod he deserves from the Jewish world, even though he should. But the other topic we discussed was potentially incoming President Joe Biden comparing Senators Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley to Goebbels, the Nazi propaganda minister. And Caroline said straight out, wait a second. If Joe Biden is calling Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley Goebbels, and everyone else, then their boss, basically President Trump, is Hitler, and all their followers are Nazis. She goes, this is a direct connection to the growth of anti-Semitism, which also will bring about the destruction of America. And this is coming from someone who's supposed to be president of the United States using that language. And that's very, very scary. And again, I know plenty of Jews who have responded to this and say, no, he was right to call them Goebbels. Well, those people have to ask themselves, well, seriously, if he is right to call them Goebbels, then how can you not see the connection of saying that anyone then who listens to them are like Nazis? And unfortunately, that is the language being used, even by fellow Jews, that all Trump supporters are painted with this brush of being white supremacists and Nazis. And again, for people who don't know me listening to your show, I've been a very big Trump supporter. I still believe there's a chance he might be president, even though it looks like it's not going to happen. But it's not about the fact of him being president because he's the best. It's because there really is a major campaign to get rid of everything he stands for. It's not about the president.
To delegitimize and to taint everything that he has touched. So it's not only about him. It's about everything he's been involved with. And that includes all the amazing things he's done here in Israel over and over again that we thank him for. Including the recognition of Jerusalem and the Golan Heights and the moving of the embassy and the Judean Samaria and the list goes on and on and on. So it's but again, the purpose of this show is to deal because, again, you have people on the left. I have friends that are on the liberal left, believe it or not. And they actually say that the right are the ones that are acting like Nazis. It seems to be very popular today to compare everything to the Holocaust, even though there's no comparison. But you're right. That is extremely, extremely dangerous language, because when people start to think that if the country goes that way, then we're going to wind up with concentration camps. And to be honest with you, I don't think that either of them are going to create concentration camps. I'm concerned about the people in the streets. And again, if the economy fails, it's just one example of what can happen. The scapegoat has always been the Jew, and there's no reason not to think that that's going to happen. And one of, for those people that don't know, in my another hat that I wear is the Jewish prepper hat, to someone who prepares. And I believe very, very firmly that one has to prepare for any eventuality, any emergency, whether it be man-made or a natural disaster. And you have to prepare, and that preparation includes, amongst other things, of course, one has to prepare by having food and water and shelter, and having medical care if necessary, and having communications. But also, one of the integral things that one has to prepare is to have a defense, and I think it's more important than ever to have a defense. Of course, we're just to make it clear, we're saying to do it legally. In many states in America, you have the potential of buying firearms unrestricted. There is a Second Amendment, at least for now. There's a Second Amendment in the U.S. Constitution, which allows you to be armed and to protect yourself. And in the UK and in the states that are not so gun friendly, there are other methods. We're not going to go into it on the show, but there are other methods of preparing to defend oneself. And I see no reason why one should not take heed to history of the Jewish people. And I think, Rabbi Lichtman, you were saying that we see over and over again, and we're going to talk about it in the next segment with the Dvar Torah, how Jews always fall for this idea. They always become complacent wherever they are in exile, and they start to think it's their home. And unfortunately, that a lot of them are lost because of that.
Correct. I would say, though, that it's not really so practical to assume that a person is going to be able to defend himself, really, to be honest. I think the answer, and you have certainly agree with me, is not to be there, not to be in that situation. Come back home, and we have, thank God, we have our own army. We have other people carrying the guns, the soldiers of Israel who are the ones carrying the guns and protecting us. And you don't have to be in a situation where you might even come to that situation. I remember there's a tshuva, there's a responsa by Rav Moshe Feinstein saying that one is allowed to, if he's going to lose a certain amount of his livelihood, if he wears a yarmulke to work, so he's allowed to not wear the yarmulke when he goes to work. And we all know that, you know, in the previous generation, many, many very religious Jews did not wear their kippah to work. And my answer to that was always, why would you live in a place where you have to give up on your ideals and not wear your yarmulke? You could be living in Israel where you can wear your kippah, right? That's my answer. So the answer is, don't buy a gun. Come to Israel. You don't need a gun.
Ideally, of course, everyone should come to Israel. But we all, you and I and everyone knows that the vast majority of Jews are not going to get up tomorrow and go to Israel. And I wish they were, and we encourage them to do so. But the ones that are not going to, they have to prepare themselves, whether it's practical or not. I think it's very practical, personally. I think that it's not just about buying a gun or any other preparation. And I speak about all my preparations, whether, again, all the things I mentioned, whether it be food storage, whether it be communications, whether it be medical. One has to be trained. You can't just go out and buy something. And especially when you deal with something that is a lethal weapon, you have to be trained. So definitely it's not just a matter of going out and buying a talisman with you have in your drawer, and that's going to protect you. You're going to have to know the skills of how to use that, just like everything else. It's a tool that could be used, and I'm a certified firearms instructor. I believe very much in training in that. Avi, we have 2 minutes left. Your last words on the subject.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to tell you, I agree with you. I think the hyperbole of saying this side's going to set up concentration camps, that side's going to set up concentration camps is totally wrong. And tachlis, if people will just look at reality, just at the violence starting in the streets between the leftist anarchists, and whenever you're going to have from one side, the other side is going to want to defend itself and it's going to be violent, we're going to be in the middle. The Jews are going to be in the middle. You don't need concentration camps. If there's a growth of violence, we're going to be hit in the middle from both sides. I hope it doesn't happen. I hope I'm wrong. I hope we're all wrong. I hope the future of America is bright for America and for the freedom-loving world. I really do. But regardless, I want one Jews to wake up and say, okay, it's time to go home. Baruch Hashem, we have our homeland. Baruch Hashem, the Jewish people are sovereign. Yes, there's plenty of work to do to make Medinat Yisrael a true Jewish homeland. And that's our challenge. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't say, I'm going to give you something perfect. We have to work on it. We have to deserve it. Don't not come to Israel because it's not perfect. Come to Israel. Coming to Israel is just the beginning of your journey in being a Jew. It's then being here and working to make Medinat Yisrael the Orla Goyim. That's what the true work is for the Jew.
Avi, thank you so much. We have to go another break. Thank you so much for being with us on the show, and we appreciate it. You're great. Keep up the great work.
Thank you for having me. Kol Tov, Josh and Urban Listeners.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
This is Shai Ben-Tekoa, and each week I'll be webcasting to you from Judea, origin of the word Jew, a people besieged and beleaguered in every generation. Nazi Germany is but a memory, but in its place the world invented the phantom Palestinians as this generation's internationally authorized Jew killers. Tune in for a different slant on life in Israel, Phantom Nation, every Monday.
Hi, I'm Rabbi David Aaron. The soul basics are the most profound, the most essential, and yet often the most neglected in our education. Join me for Soul Talk on Israel's News Talk Radio and discover the secrets to love, spiritual growth, and personal power.
Hello, welcome back to Israel Unplugged. We are here for our last segment for today, and I want to start it off with really a continuation of everything we've been speaking about in the last hour. And as always, it always comes back to the Torah because, you know, God gave us this book and this is literally God's word to the world. So everything is included in it. All the lessons that God wants us to learn are in the Torah. And the lesson I want to share with you today is from this week's Parsha, where it speaks about the last three plagues that were brought upon the Egyptians to let the Jewish people go. So one of them was darkness, right? There was 3 days of absolute darkness in throughout Egypt. And Rashi, the great super commentary Rashi on the Chumash, brings from the words of our sages, why did God bring darkness upon the Egyptians? That's why, you know, maybe you can explain some of the other plagues in a logical way, but darkness, like what is that? Why is that such a plague? And Rashi explains, because there were wicked Jews in that generation who did not want to leave Egypt. And they died during these 3 days of darkness so that the Egyptians would not see their downfall and say, oh, look, the Jews are also being afflicted just like us. So God really did it as a favor because he used those 3 days to get rid of all the wicked Jews so that without the Egyptians knowing about it. And basically, when the 3 days of darkness were over, the Jewish people were much smaller, as we'll get to in a second. But what's curiously missing from the story is why? Why would there be Jews who wouldn't want to leave Egypt? Think about it. They were being enslaved. They were working, you know, like literally like slaves. And why would a slave not want to be freed from the trouble and the terrible conditions that he is living under? So the Midrash Tanhuma, which is maybe one of the sources that Rashi used, but again, Rashi didn't quote it fully. There, the Midrash says, because there were wicked Jews who had Egyptian friends and who enjoyed honor and fortune in Egypt, they did not want to leave. And therefore, God said that he's going to wait till the darkness so that the Egyptians won't know. So what the Midrash adds is the reason that there were Jews who didn't want to leave, believe it or not, even though they were being persecuted. But you know what? Life wasn't so bad. They had friends and they enjoyed honor and fortune in Egypt. And therefore, they did not want to believe. They wanted not want to leave. Did not want to leave Egypt. So the question is, okay, so you think, how many Jews can you imagine? How many Jews could there possibly have been that didn't want to leave Egypt? So the rabbis have a dispute over this, and there's no way to explain it except as a hyperbole, an exaggeration. But the rabbis, based on a verse in next week's parsha, that says "Vachamushim alu b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim," that the Jewish people left Egypt. Chamushim literally means armed. Speaking about what we were just talking about before, that the Jewish people, when they left Egypt, they took arms with them to be able to fight the enemies. But that's when the Jewish people as a whole, as a nation, have an army. Of course, we have to have an army to protect the Jewish people. Anyway, but the rabbis understood that it's also a hint to something else. Chamushim reminds us of what word? Chamesh, five. So there's a dispute whether it was one-fifth of the Jews died during darkness, one of every, what was it? There was another opinion that was one of every 50, one of every 5,000. And there's even an opinion that says that of all the Jews, of the 600, we know that eventually there were 600,000 Jews that left Egypt. Of them, actually, there were an enormous amount of Jews who died during the plague of darkness. So the question is, what's going on here? What's the message for us? And the message, I believe, is that we have to understand that these Jews became complacent. They became comfortable in the exile. And they, to such a degree that they didn't want to leave. You know, there's a lot of Jews out there, very religious Jews, who don't believe in the state of Israel. And they say, you know, when the Messiah comes, we'll come then. And they think that, you know, it's going to be clear that the Messiah is here, and they're going to, of course, want to go along with him. But we see that, you know, what greater Messiah was there than Moses? And he said to the Jewish people, God sent me to take you out of Egypt. And they didn't listen to him. According to some opinions, a majority of the Jews, in fact, all the opinions, because even the one-fifth means one-fifth left, four-fifths died. Four-fifths or maybe even much larger percentages of the Jewish people died during darkness. There were so many Jews there who got so comfortable in exile that they didn't want to leave. So this was basically the idea that I shared in my book, Eretz Yisrael and the Parsha. And then shortly after I wrote the article before I put it into the book, someone showed me an absolutely unbelievable piece by Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. If anyone here knows, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was one of the great Gedolim, one of the great rabbis in America in the previous generation, him together with Rav Moshe Feinstein. They really led the Jews in America. And he writes something that is so unbelievable. He says, he asked a basic question. There's a famous midrash, a famous teaching, again, of the rabbis, where the rabbis say that when the Jews were going through the Yam Suf, the Red Sea, and God was about to drown all the Egyptians who were chasing the Jews, so the angels said to God, they said, "Why are you killing them? They're no different than the Jews. Elu ovdei avodah zarah, ve'elu ovdei avodah zarah. Both of these are idolaters. Both the Jews and the Egyptians are all idolaters. So why would you kill only the Egyptians and not the Jews?" So it means that even those Jews who made it out of Egypt and 7 days later crossed the sea, even they were so wicked that the angels were not able to see any difference between them and the Egyptians. So the question becomes, why then did God kill four-fifths of the Jews in Egypt during the plague of darkness? But these Jews, this one-fifth that left, they were saved. Why were they saved? They were also wicked. Because what was different? What was different? So Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky writes, the answer seems to be that these evildoers, meaning the ones who left, who died during the plague of darkness, they wanted to prevent the others from leaving Egypt, for they felt that the time of redemption had not yet arrived, since they had a tradition that the bondage would last for 400 years. This is unbelievable. What he's saying is that these four-fifths of the Jews who died during darkness were actually very religious Jews. They were so religious that they said, hey, we have a tradition that this exile is going to last for 400 years, if that's what God told Abraham very clearly. So it's only been 210 years, so this can't be it. And therefore, we're not going to leave. We're not going to leave too early. We don't want to be like the B'nai Ephraim who left too early. And God smote them down. He killed them, all four-fifths of them, because they were trying to prevent the other ones. The ones who actually did leave wanted to leave. They wanted to be redeemed. Okay, they had some problem. They didn't. They thought, you know, that God should be worshipped in this way and that there are other gods. That could be fixed. But a Jew who doesn't want to be redeemed and uses logic like, oh, you know, but it just doesn't work out according to the way I understand the way redemption should be. It should be 400 years and not 210 years. Even though you had Moses coming and saying, no, guys, listen, trust me, God sent me. He sent me to free you. Oh, and the fact that it's 210 years, don't worry, God knows how to make calculations. And he calculated it in a way in our favor that we can leave 210 years, meaning 190 years early. We don't have to wait the full 400 years, but they didn't want to believe. And it so reminds me, unfortunately, of so many very religious Jews whose reasoning for not wanting to come back to Israel and be redeemed is reasons very similar to these. Reasons like, you know, this can't possibly be the redemption, because we understood that the redemption is supposed to be happen in this way with religious Jews, and it's supposed to be a return to God Which, of course, we also believe in, but we just say it's going to be in a later stage. And they reject...
That we're going to be swept up by the wings of eagles, that we could just sit back and
exactly,
wait for it to happen.
Exactly, exactly. This is Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky speaking. He is hinting to those who say, you know, I understand better. I know how the redemption is supposed to happen. And if it's not happening that way, this can't possibly be the redemption. And those type of Jews God killed during the plague of darkness, and they did not make it even till the Exodus from Egypt. And that's a lesson for us. And there's actually one more piece. Unless, Josh, you want to
no, 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 go, 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 thing. Go. You only have 1 minute.
I don't know if we're going to have enough time, but this is an unbelievable piece. He ends his piece, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, saying that think about the Jews of that time. They wake up one day and 4/5 of their people are killed. That is more people that were killed during the Holocaust. Could you imagine what the Jews were thinking at the time? So he says like this. He says, undoubtedly, the Jews were confounded, saying, what has God done to us? And then he ends with the following. This is our consolation in our present situation after the Holocaust. When we complain as if that's possible about the way God deals with the Jewish people, why is it a consolation? For according to the above, it seems that we are close to redemption. I mean, when you see such a thing happening, so many Jews dying, that's a sign that God is about to redeem us. And that's exactly what happened back in Egypt, and that's what happened in our days. We are in the midst of the redemptive process, and it's time for Jews to come home. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you again.
Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. Just click the orange button at the top of the IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com homepage, log in as yourself or an anonymous guest, and join in on the fun. You'll meet other listeners from all over the world who listen to Israel News Talk Radio, and you can make new friends. Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. It's the closest you can get to being in the studio with us.
We love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candlelighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.